behalf of Library Information Services, this is Bob Keebler with Michael Kitsis discussing Private Letter Ruling 2013-30016, a critical ruling of first impression regarding 1035 exchanges after death. Michael, on behalf of Weinberg Information Services, welcome to today's podcast. We understand that this ruling creates many post-mortem opportunities for beneficiaries of non-qualified annuities seeking to enter into tax-free exchanges. Michael, what was your impression when you first saw this ruling?
I think my first impression seeing this ruling was something effective. Wow, it's about time we finally got this fixed. This was an area where there had long been a view that the IRS would be willing to allow these transfers, and I'm told anecdotally a few companies had been acquiescing on this already, expecting that if they were ever challenged, the IRS would uphold it. But it was really nice to finally just see the IRS write down in black and white, yes, this is a permissible transfer, and no, there are not adverse tax consequences.
Now, this is certainly a novel and an important ruling, but let's back up and talk about IRD with annuities when a person dies. For example, grandmother invested $100,000 in 1985. The annuity is now worth $300,000 for a gain of $200,000. I recognize the $200,000 of gain is ordinary income, and some person or entity will eventually pay income tax. However, what are the foundational concepts under not just Section 61 of the code, but more importantly, Section 72 of the code that come into play?
So you're correct. The distributions out of an annuity ultimately are going to be taxed as ordinary income. We can't really avoid that. It's going to be taxable to whoever ultimately gets the money. But the challenge for annuities and what happens to annuities after someone passes away, it's actually very similar to what happens with retirement accounts after someone passes away. There are actually required minimum distributions that have to occur to beneficiaries after someone passes away. We don't have required distributions while we're alive with annuities, but we do have a set of RMD rules that kick in when someone passes away. And actually very similar to IRAs, literally, if you look at Code Section 401A9 for retirement accounts and 72S, which has the same rules for annuities, you could basically just copy the code over, take out the word retirement account, substitute in the word annuity, and you'd have essentially the same framework, although annuity companies have interpreted a little bit differently over the years in how they apply it. But in essence, we have a five-year rule, or we have stretches over life expectancy, or we have a spousal rollover provision. And in particular, for those folks that try to do stretches over life expectancy, as with the stretch IRA, we've had a lot of challenges because once you started a stretch, you couldn't change companies, you couldn't change annuities. That was the restriction point that we had before this ruling came along.
So if I die with a large annuity and it goes, for example, to my children, they can elect to stretch it out over their life expectancy.
Correct. So they can do a stretch. Some companies expect that the stretch is going to be done by annuitizing it for their life expectancy. Other companies will allow you to take systematic withdrawals over your life, over their life expectancy. But the tax code does allow these stretches to occur. The restriction, though, is while you were allowed to stretch, what was missing is annuities had no equivalent of a trustee-to-trustee transfer of an inherited IRA. So just as on the IRA side, you can't take the money out and roll it over somewhere, but you are allowed to do a trustee-to-trustee transfer. We didn't have that on the annuity side. So it wasn't. And so the good news was, hey, you can stretch mom and dad's annuity. The bad news was you were stuck with whatever kind of annuity mom and dad happened to bequeath you, which was often a mismatch if, say, mom and dad were very elderly and had a fixed annuity because they were conservative, and you were very young and investing for a 40-year time horizon, and you don't want it all stuck inside of a fixed annuity. You want a variable so you can get some equities and some long-term growth.
So let's just say I'm extremely conservative. My mother dies. I get this $300,000 annuity, and the annuity company offers me, let's just say, $3,000 a month for an easy number. Sure. I would have been stuck with that in the past, but today I can shop around and see if there's another company that would let me do a tax-free 1035 exchange, and maybe I can get instead of $3,000 a month, a little bit more, $3,300 a month, call it. Is that the essence of this ruling?
Correct. That's the essence of this ruling. Now, you're going to have to continue to take out at least your $3,000 a month, if not more. The ruling was actually very clear that if you're going to change to another company, whatever RMDs you had from the old company, you have to continue at least as rapidly from the new company. But you may have the opportunity to get rid of a contract that was paying a 2% interest rate and go and find one that pays a 3 or 4% interest rate, or been stuck with one that was invested solely in bonds, where now you can invest in one that has equities for growth. And those 1035 exchanges are now permitted. You have to keep doing your $3,000 a month or more if you want to, but you have the opportunity to switch to a new annuity that has a better return and that ultimately you can generate more income and more cash flow from.
Help me out with understanding the law when a non-qualified annuity is payable to a trust. What do most experts believe happens? And does this ruling apply to that at all?
So the rule for trusts is a little bit messier. If we look at IRAs, in the IRA case, we have a set of rules that says, hey, if you're payable to a trust, normally the five-year rule would apply, but we will let you look through the trust to the underlying beneficiaries and stretch based on their life expectancy. And we have a series of rules under the 401A9 regs that explain to us how to do that. On the annuity side, we've never gotten that leniency. And so the common viewpoint for annuities is still that if an annuity is payable to a trust, you're stuck with the five-year rule and there is no look-through treatment to the underlying beneficiaries. Or at least, I guess if anybody out there is listening who has this scenario, this is still an excellent situation for a novel and fresh ruling. As it stands right now, we've got nothing from the IRS that would let us look through the trust to the underlying beneficiary. So if I've got a non-qualified annuity that's payable to a trust, I am stuck with a five-year rule. I could apply the new guidance of PLR 2013-30016, which would let me at least switch annuity companies, but I'm likely still going to be stuck with a five-year rule. At best, it just means I can own a different series of investments when dealing with this five-year rule. Now, the small caveat I would add to that is I have been told that there are one or two companies now that are looking at allowing beneficiaries to do stretches through a trust. Even though the IRS hasn't blessed it, their expectation is that the IRS will bless it, and they're willing to acquiesce and cooperate in that scenario. I can imagine that companies that are willing to do that might now begin to market, hey, if you have a recently deceased beneficiary annuity and you 1035 exchange it to us within the year of death, we will let you start lifetime stretches through the trust based on the trust beneficiaries, and we'll cooperate with that. So there may be some opportunity to at least shop for annuity companies that are willing to cooperate with that treatment. Technically, the IRS could still disagree with all of it, but it at least puts the opportunity on the table that if you have a company that isn't cooperating with see-through treatment on a trust and you can find another company that will cooperate with see-through treatment on a trust, you have the opportunity to switch if you're not already several years in and unequivocally locked into the five-year rule.
Michael, finally, if our listeners have a similar client, should they obtain their own ruling, or would you go ahead with this just on your own, kind of without a net? Would you feel comfortable that most people should probably get their own ruling?
You know, what we're seeing so far, and frankly what we see is the trend in a lot of these types of annuity rulings, is consumers and advisors tend to look at what the annuity companies are doing. And when the annuity companies are, as I kind of put it, are willing to cooperate with the rulings, which means they'll acquiesce, they'll do the paperwork the way that the rulings guide, and they'll provide the 1099 tax reporting accordingly. When the annuity companies are willing to cooperate with the rulings, that's usually a pretty good indication for most advisors that the companies are confident enough that this is going to hold, that they're not worried about blowback from the IRS. And that's a pretty good signal for consumers about the likelihood. The early buzz that I'm hearing on this one is that companies are very willing to acquiesce to this ruling. Many of them have thought this was the right treatment all along. I know I've certainly been in the camp that I thought this was the right treatment all along. We just didn't have a ruling to affirm it. So I don't think it's going to be necessary for people to go and get their own rulings for this, as long as they're willing to follow the key parts that were in this ruling and follow the same facts and circumstances. And again, those key areas, you still have to execute a proper 1035 exchange, which means the money goes directly. You don't take it outright. You have to agree that the new annuity can't have new contributions, can't be assigned or transferred to anyone else, because, of course, a beneficiary account has to remain for that beneficiary. And the new account has to take distributions at least as rapidly as the old beneficiary annuity was going to. And as long as you follow those pieces, I don't really see a situation here where you need to go get your own ruling. I think we're going to find that annuity companies will be relatively quick to adopt this guidance and provide the necessary forms to ensure that people are acting accordingly. If you have something about your fact situation that deviates from that, you know, we are still in the realm of private letter rulings, so I probably would be applying for an individual one. But if you've got a fact scenario that fits this ruling pretty cleanly, I doubt most advisors are going to be going to get their own private letter rulings. It shouldn't be that novel of a situation.
Michael, it's always an honor to have you on these podcasts, especially so quickly after a ruling comes out. On behalf of Lineberg Information Services, this has been Bob Keebler with Michael Kitsis, discussing non-qualified annuities and private letter ruling 2013-30016. Michael, thank you for joining us today.